If you're a dad, you're not afraid to work hard.
Never give up.
Never compromise.
And the best dads always look for ways to get better.
I'm looking for something to energize me.
I'm looking for something to push me further.
And I'm looking for something to go with these nachos.
Dad Fuel, the energy drink designed just for dad.
So I can finish the fight.
So I can finish the race.
So I can finish mowing the lawn. And later on, I might watch some golf.
The fuel dads need to do the things dads do.
Climb the highest peak.
Go the furthest distance.
Check the scores. Read the newspaper. Give amazing relationship advice.
Why are you crying?
You should really talk to your mother about that.
Dad Fuel comes loaded with taurine, ginseng, and 100% of your daily recommended value of Hi, Hungry, I'm Dad.
I start every morning with the four D's. Stevo's Donuts. Dad Fuel, down blanket. Breakfast of champions, baby.
Now available in four bold flavors. Original Orange, Grow Model Raspberry, Grow Master Mango, and I thought I told you to take out the garbage grape.
You can't touch my passion.
You can't touch my drive.
And you definitely can't touch my thermostat. No way.
So whether you're thirsty for victory
or just plain thirsty.
No, seriously, it's empty. Can I get another one?
Dad Fuel.
Because I am fearless.
Because I am unstoppable.
Because the players on TV aren't going to yell at themselves.
Come on! Throw the ball!
All right. Happy Father's Day. Man, I'm so grateful for the dads and the grandfathers who are setting the spiritual pace for their families and leading your children and your grandchildren to follow after Jesus Christ. So once again, can we give it for all the dads, all the granddads in our life who are leading us towards Jesus Christ. I just believe that when you have a good dad around, man, things get better. I don't know if you know or heard about the viral Craigslist ad that went out a number of years ago. A group of millennials were getting together to have a party, and it hit them that none of them knew how to grill. And so they decided to put out an advertisement on Craigslist about a generic dad that is needed. They said they need a generic dad who had 8 to 10 years of experience of being a dad. He also had 8 to 10 years of experience of grilling. He needs to be the kind of dad that calls someone sport or someone champ. He needs to be able to talk about dad things like lawnmowers and how to build a deck and Jimmy Buffett, all right? And he needs to have a solid dad name like Bill, Dave, or Randy. And I just think about how it's great to have a good dad around. So we are so thankful for you dads out there. Hey, I want to encourage you with this. We've been continuing to be good stewards of what God has given us, and we've been asking you to help us with the chest of Joash above and beyond tithes and offerings. And because this right here helps us take care of what God has blessed us with this campus. And it's 15 years old, and roofs got to be replaced, ACs, which are slightly important in summertime in Florida, and places like knowing how to park, and basically, you know, also you're not having to trip when you're walking through the atrium. So we're working on these things that are necessities. And last week I told you we had $184,000 we'd raised so far. Let me give you the new number. This past week was tremendous. People just came out of nowhere. God came out of nowhere through RCC. And right now the new number is $238,000. Ain't that amazing? Amazing. And I'm so excited because of this over and above generosity. We're able to actually do other things that are mandatory, like a security system, fire safety system, which have to be updated. And so I just want to say a big thank you to God. Amen. He has been so good to us, this whole chest of Joash. So thank you so much, RCC, for continuing your generosity. Now today we're going to continue also our study right here in the book of Philippians called Joyful. And I don't know about you, but I definitely need this in my life right now. And today we're going to look at kind of how we can have joy that is countercultural. Let me talk to you about two dads who go out and they hang out together and they go to a fish joint and they both order fish, obviously, and it comes out on a platter. One's a bigger piece, one's a smaller piece. And one dad, he gets the one platter first. He grabs a bigger fish for himself, and then he passes the platter to the next guy, and the next guy gets a smaller fish, and he throws it on his plate, and he's looking at his buddy. He's going, man, you got some kind of nerf. And the friend's like, what are you talking about? He says, well, you took the bigger fish for you, and you gave me the smaller fish. And he's like, what's the problem? He says, well, if I'd gotten the platter first, I would have given myself the smaller one and give you the bigger one. And then the guy says, well, that's what happened. What's the problem? I mean, let's just be honest. Let's just go ahead and say it. Man, it's hard to be joyful, and it's hard for joy to stay around when it's hard to get along with other people, right? I mean, it's hard to be joyful. And you know, so all of us want to be happy. And see, everyone thinks that happiness is about your agenda. If my agenda gets done, then I'll be happy. That's what we tend to think. That's what the world tells us. The problem is there's almost 8 billion people on planet Earth. There's 8 billion wills, each of their own interests. And if you have a lot of wills going that have their own interest at mind, what happens is you have a lot of colliding. You got a lot of collisions happening of wills, and that even happens at church. And because of that, we have Philippians chapter 2. Let's go ahead and dig right in. Starting in verse 1. Therefore, Paul says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, he says this, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being in spirit of one mind. Now, Paul is in prison. And if you're in prison, what would make your joy complete? Probably getting out of prison. But not Paul. What makes his joy complete is knowing that the church in Philippi are actually playing well with one another, that they're actually getting along. See, Paul's very request implies that there's too many collisions that go on in churches and in our life because joy is a relational challenge. Joy is a relational challenge. I mentioned that Paul in his letter to the Philippians mentions rejoicing or joy 16 times. But listen to this. If you read it closely, Paul never mentions that the Philippians had any. We think that, you know, this book's about joy, so obviously they were joyful people. No, don't assume that. And evidently, they're struggling, being one spirit and with one mind, and yet you get several hints of this. One example is right here in the middle of chapter 2 when Paul says, do everything without grumbling or what, church, or arguing. Now, you don't have to say don't grumble or don't argue unless they are. And everybody knows you can't create a culture of joy if whining and bickering are tolerated. See, all this issue with arguing and bickering is in the church is a serious relational breach. And then a couple of chapters later in chapter 4, we kind of see what's going on. Here's what Paul says. So I plead with you, Euodia, and I plead with you, Syntyche, to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, look at this. He says, help these women. Help these women since they are contented at my side, Paul says, in the cause of the gospel. So now we're going to understand what's going on here. What's happening is these two very influential women are colliding of wills are happening. They're not getting along with each other. Have you ever been in a situation like that? You ever seen two people kind of, you know, you're kind of caught in the crossfires, like watching tennis. This person says this one says this one. It goes back and forth. Maybe it's siblings. Maybe it's that family reunion. Maybe it's in the workplace. Maybe it's among friends. We've all heard of sport teams that have imploded because there was a divide in the locker room. And as I was working on this message, I thought about being in fifth grade. It reminded me of in fifth grade, there was two really influential girls in my fifth grade class. One was Sunshine Sullenberger, and also Karen was the other one. I can't remember Karen's last name, but they were both kind of influential girls in our fifth grade class. And they always had parties on different dates, and they were best friends. I mean, they were best friends until fifth grade. When they decided to have their own big party on the same day, like Sunshine had hers and Karen had hers on the same day. And all of a sudden, all the kids in fifth grade, all the girls in the fifth grade had to decide, am I on Sunshine's team or am I on Karen's team? Now, us guys, we laughed about it. We thought it was hilarious watching all this go down. But it got so bad that Karen did not show up to the next year. She didn't show up for sixth grade. She went somewhere else. So where are you going to go? You're going to go with Euodia? You're going to go to Syntyche here? And I don't know what they're arguing about. Apparently it wasn't over doctrinal problem. Paul would have addressed that. Maybe they're arguing and fighting over who has the worst name, Euodia or Syntyche. I don't know. I mean, they're both bad names. I don't know. But here's what I do know. Underneath this is a bigger issue. And the bigger issue is that neither one of these women are putting the interest of the other above their own interest. Because they couldn't get along, joy could not stay around. And now I wonder if you're in a situation like that. I wonder if you're in a situation like that at work or in your family, maybe friends at school. Now, I don't know where that's at right now. Maybe right now there's a tension going on, and it's like joy is being sucked out of the community, of the friendship, of your family because of the tension that's happening. And some of you are thinking, absolutely, Pastor, and I can't wait for you to tell me how to change them. Well, I can't tell you how to change them, but I can tell you what you need to change. You need to stop using the ugliest four-letter word in the English language. You need to stop using that. I know many of you right now, you're like, I know what that is. You think it's Bama, don't you? You think it's Bama, all right? And that is ugly word. It's not that word. That's the second ugliest one. The first ugly word is S-E-L-F, self. That's the ugliest word in the English language. Verse 3, here's what Paul says. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, look at this, in what, church? In humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of who? The others. He says, in humility, value others above yourselves. Wherever collisions of wills are present, let me tell you right now, humility is absent. Because the popular wisdom says this, you want to be joyful? You want to have joy? Well, you look out for yourself. You put your agenda the highest priority of your life. It's the reason why we in our culture have a magazine called Self, right? We don't have magazines out there called Others. The conventional wisdom says the way to joy is you promote yourself. But real life experience tells you this. We got 8 billion people on this planet with their own agenda who get caught up in competition and conflict and bitterness. And if that is your path to joy, I need to be really blunt with you. God will not bless that path. God will not bless that path with joy. Peter says this when he says in 1 Peter, all of you. Not some of you. Not if you feel like this applies to you. All of you. Clothe yourselves with what? Clothe yourselves with humility towards one another, because God, man, he opposes the proud, but he shows favor to the who? To the humble. Just like joy, humility is a choice. You can clothe yourself with humility, or you can choose to keep humility in the closet. The choice is yours. It's counterintuitive, by the way. You see, from birth, we've unconsciously been discipled to be ruled by our pride. The natural thing for all of us is for us to look after our own interests first and most. Let me illustrate. You ever been in a group photo? All right, you know what a group photo is? Somebody, especially selfie, somebody with long arms takes a photo. And our staff is Travis. You know, he's 7'15" or whatever it is, and he's, you know, he's got long arms. We all get together and you take a photo. And so here's a question. When you're in a group photo, what is the first thing you look at in that group photo? What is it? What's the first thing? Yourself. Yourself. And here's the next question. How do you decide if it's a group, if it's a good group photo or not? If you look good, right? I mean, if everybody else looks great and you look terrible, it is a terrible photo. Right? It's like, whatever you do, don't post that on social media. See, that's just human nature. It's how the flesh reacts. Humility is an intentional mindset. It's so intentional. Humility is not something we're born with. We have to choose to put it on. We have to intentionally make the choice to clothe ourselves with humility. I've got to be honest with you, man. A lot of the time, I could be arrested for indecent exposure. I mean, I struggle with humility. And I know I'm not the only one in the room. Two things have revealed to me how selfish I am. One is getting married. One is getting married. When I do premarital counseling, I always tell people, always like, hey, you have no idea how selfish you are until you get married, right? I mean, I right out of the gate, I'll never forget, I thought, you know, 23 years of my life, it's all been about me. It's about making sure I'm happy, making sure everything goes my way. And now I want to get married. And now it's not going to be just me with that agenda. My wife's going to have that agenda too, man. She's all about making Nathan happy, right? Wrong. five minutes into it, I figured out, you know, I'm sharing space with another life. And I never forget our very first big argument. You know that first big one? Our first big one was over, shocker, money. It was over money. I couldn't believe she wasn't happy with the way I was spending money. For 23 years, I've been spending money however I wanted, and it was fine. I knew what I was doing, but now I was sharing money with somebody else. And I got so mad at her for questioning me that I said something that I have never said since. I called her something, all right? You ready for it? Here's what I called her. I called her stingy. And I've never called her that since, all right? That was not a good choice on my part at all. You know, I thought to myself, why am I getting so riled up by this woman that I love for questioning me about money? I would die for this woman. Somebody came in the house and tried to shoot her, I would take the bullet for her. I was upset because she's trying to make sure the decisions we're making financially were on the same page, that we're doing well, we're making good, godly financial decisions. God was teaching me how to clothe myself with humility, and apparently I had more to learn, so I became a dad. And when you're a dad, you realize how selfish we are when we come out of the womb. I have never had to teach my kids how to say mine. I have never had to teach my kids how to whine, how to fuss with one another. I had to teach them how to be patient, how to wait for someone else, how to put somebody else's agenda ahead of your own. Now, I'm not trying to discourage you from having a family, all right? What I'm saying is that God uses family, God uses close community in my life to show me how selfish I am. I mean, we're all about, I love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your strength. We're all about that. We're all about the second command, love your neighbor as you love yourself until you get around your neighbor. I love people until I got to hang out with people. Right, and I realize the reason that is because I'm selfish. And that's what's going on inside of me. Paul uses this word here, I think, that really kind of zones in on this. He says, look after the interest. Look after the interest of others. That word right there, look, is a word called scopus. And that is where we get our word scope. This is a gun scope right here. And what do you do with a scope? You what? You zoom in, right? You magnify whatever you're looking at, you magnify that. And Paul is saying, I want you to magnify other people's interest above your own interest. I want you to zoom in on other people's interest ahead of your own interest. Scoop in on that, zoom in, magnify what's going on. You want joy to come back in your community? Well, here's how you do it. Zoom in and be more focused on somebody else's interest more than your own interest. And I got to tell you, if the one thing is revealed to me that I've grown, that I need to grow in humility is community, but even bigger than that is the gospel. Paul says this in the next verse. He says, in your relationships with one another, have, look at this, the same mindset as Christ Jesus. See, the gospel doesn't just call me to think some things about Jesus. It causes me to think like Jesus. Now, Paul does something that pastors have been doing for thousands of years. And that is, he quotes a song. He quotes a song that's got an incredible doctrinal truth. But let me tell you right now, he's not quoting it for doctrinal reasons. He's quoting this song for ethical reasons. Because the song is about Jesus. And he's presenting Jesus as our countercultural model. Because Jesus intentionally chose the unnatural path to joy. Look at this song. It's an incredible song. It starts in verse 6 when he says this, quotes the lyrics, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, Jesus, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. Jesus, what did he do? He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even what? Death on a what? On a cross. And what this song is pointing out is not just who Jesus was, but how he came, the way he came. He could have come and got what he deserved, which is power and glory and majesty, but instead Jesus chose downward mobility. Paul is telling the church in Philippi that the model that Jesus gives us is opposite of culture. It's the counterintuitive way of Jesus. It'll produce fewer collisions in your life. If you choose this path, it'll give you better relationships and, added bonus, greater joy. And realize that Jesus did not have to take this path. He chose this path. He didn't have to come and die. Now, you and I, we have to die because of sin. That because of sin, how it ravages the world, there is death. But he didn't have to do that. He chose this because the wage of sin is death. He had to die for us. He chose it. Why? Because he was looking out for your interest. He was looking out for you above his own interest. See, only sinful man should die, but only perfect man could die for all of us. So God took deity and he pours into it, into humanity. All of a sudden, Jesus is now fully God and fully man so that he could take on our place and choose to die for us. You know, Jesus says that we should carry our cross every single day. Let me tell you right now, though, he did not say that we should carry his cross because he's the only one who can carry it. His cross has the sin of all the world on it. Only sinless, perfect God in the flesh could carry that cross. And he did. Why? Because he humbled himself. He humbled himself. And here's what the Hebrew writer says. Amazing verse. He says, for the joy set before him, he endured the what? He endured the cross. For the joy? Really? Yeah, the joy of rescuing you. The joy of rescuing you. The joy of putting your interest first above his own so that you could be saved. The joy of knowing that fellowship can be restored. Reconciliation can happen once again between us and one another. For the joy he died to self so that you and I could live. To follow him is to choose that same path to joy. So what we're doing every week is we're trying to think of a new way to think about joy, rediscover joy, understand joy. And here's the message in a sentence. And here it is right here. To be full of joy, I must what? I must empty myself. If I'm going to be full of joy, I have to empty myself. And that sounds crazy. I mean, that sounds like the complete opposite, but that's exactly what Scripture is calling us to do. And if I'm going to be a model of Christ, I have to follow the Christ model. And what is that? I have to humble myself. And Paul does what any good preacher does. He gives real life examples. He talks about two guys. He talks about Timothy and Epaphroditus. He says both of these guys in Philippians chapter 2, he says both of these guys have put your interest, church, above themselves. Follow their path. You know what he's saying? He's saying, you know, you want that tension to subside in your church. You want joy to return to your church. You guys have got to put the interests of others above yourselves. Just like Timothy did. Just like Epaphroditus did. And just like Paul did. Paul is in jail. And if you're in jail, man, you feel alone. But he sent both of those brothers out to be a blessing to the church in Philippi. Because he put the church of Philippi's interests above his own interests. He practiced what he preached. And so we got a big test, church. Because humility is ultimately a test of faith. And here it is. Do I trust? Do I really trust that Jesus' way is the best way? Do I really trust that? The night before Jesus died, he does the most amazing thing. He washes the disciples' feet. People who are going to betray him. People who are going to leave him high and dry. People who are going to abandon him. People who are going to deny him. He washes their feet before they're going to do it. And he knows they're going to do it. And he says this, I'm the teacher, and I'm doing this so that you will wash one another, so you will put other people's interests above yourselves. And then he says this amazing verse when he says in John 13, now that you know these things, you'll be what? You'll be blessed if you what? If you do them. If you do them. The word blessed also can be translated as happy or joyful. Please notice that Jesus didn't say, he didn't say, now that you know these things, you'll be happy. He didn't say that. The problem in America, with churches in America, is not an information problem. We got more information, we got more knowledge at the touch of our fingertips than anybody else has ever had. We don't have an information problem in our culture when it comes to Christianity. We have a transformation problem. We know, but we don't do. We know, but we don't do. Jesus says, he didn't say knowledge would bring joy. He said selfless obedience. That will bring joy. We've got a faith test. Do we really believe Jesus knows what he's talking about? Do we really believe it? Because here's what's cool. Jesus has surrounded us here at RCC with a whole bunch of people who put other people's interests above and beyond themselves. And because of that path, they are choosing joy. They are experiencing joy. I think about Father's Heart Ministry, which right here on our campus serves out thousands of meals to our community here in Clay County. And those people are experiencing joy. We have teams of people who go work with junior high students in the local schools and teach them about Jesus Christ. Those people are putting those junior high students above their own interests, and they are choosing the path to joy. I think about on Thursday nights, we have Food and Friends. We've served almost 800 meals on Thursday nights. And I tell you what, it's amazing watching the joy permeate that ministry. We've housed people who are struggling with housing. We've helped people who almost went homeless, and we helped them kind of get over that hump so they would not go have to experience what it's like to be homeless. We've helped people who are struggling all kinds of ways financially. Christian and Callie Robles are making a difference on the international front. People are partnering with them. This does include all the ministries we have here at RCC. I mean, our women's team and our men's ministry and all of our core ministry is meeting right now, and we've got a CR and grief share, divorce care. Our kids ministry had over 100 kids at camp just over a week ago. Our student ministry had a big lock-in last week. I'm talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volunteers for all this. All over our church, we have these testimonies that the path to joy is selfless service. And we see that all over our church. And here's the truth. Joy increases when self decreases. Amen, church? Joy increases when yourself and myself decreases. I think about a friend of mine, Caleb, who spoke here about a month ago. He's at a church called the Shepherd of the Hills, and the lead pastor there is a guy named Dudley. They're in Southern California, and Dudley and his best friend went to a Dodgers game and having a great time. Weather's great, Dodgers are winning. It can't get any better than this. And so he's sitting there watching this, and he looks over and he sees a boy with dark glasses and has a glove. And he's like, well, that's cool. And he's sitting there with his parent, and all of a sudden he starts seeing the parent talk to the kid after every play. That's a ball. That's a strike. That's a fly out. That's a ground out to third base. That's a single. And he realized that kid with the dark glasses is blind. That kid's got a glove on, and he's hoping to catch a foul ball. He says there's no bigger act of faith than a blind kid with a glove at a Dodgers game hoping to catch a ball. I mean, what an amazing act of faith. But anyway, this kid is there, and it's on his mind, and all of a sudden, here comes, wouldn't you know it, a foul ball towards the way. It goes right over the kid's head. If the kid would have saw it, he would have caught it. But it goes right over his head, and all of a sudden, these grown men are on the ground wrestling for it, and it squirts out, and this woman sees it. She grabs it, gets up, grabs it, smiles, and sits back down. And Dudley started thinking, wouldn't it be cool if that woman gave that ball to that blind kid? And he tells his friend that. He's going to go talk to the woman, but his friend says, no, you want to go get a Coke? You go grab a Coke. I'll go talk to her. Dudley gives him a 20. He says, well, if she's kind of pushing back, give her this $20. Dudley goes off, gets his Coke, comes back. His friend is totally discouraged when he comes back to his seat. He goes, what happened? He said, I went up to her, and I started talking to her, and I could see she was hesitant, so I got your 20, and I added 20 to it. I gave her $40 to get that ball, and all of a sudden, her boyfriend grabs the ball, and he says these words, we're not selling the ball. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get a ball at a Dodgers game. We're not giving that kid our ball. And Dudley started thinking about that. He says, I want to tell you about a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's not picking up a ball and then sitting back down, then taking it home and then sticking it in a closet, and after you die, your kids throw it away. You had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You could have given that ball to a blind boy. You could have made his day. And every time you thought of this moment, you could have smiled. You had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and your selfishness caused you to miss it. What is the best path to joy? One more story. There's a children's home, and it's Christmas time, and what they will do is get a local church, and they would tell the church, here's what the kids want for Christmas. They would give kind of the Christmas wish list to the church, and the church, every family would kind of adopt a kid, and they would give that kid, you know, the gift that through the children's home. Well, all of a sudden the gifts show up, and the 8-year-old boy gets his Christmas gift, and he's there, and he opens it up, and all of a sudden it's a doll for a much younger kid and for a girl. And the woman looks at this, and she's like, that's a mistake, an 8-year-old boy, so this is what I wanted. And the woman started asking, what do you mean? He says, he went on to explain that he and his sister had been taken out of an abusive situation. They'd been taken out of the home, and they had just been separated a few minutes earlier. But they had been promised that this Christmas, that they would be able to get together, and that he would be able to be with his 3-year-old sister, and he wanted to give her something. See, he got his gift so he could pass on his gift to someone else. And I want you to know something. Don't feel sorry for that boy, because when he was with his sister on that Christmas day and he saw her open that gift, he was full of joy. Right now, you have a tension going on. You have relationships. Something's happening and isn't working well, and it's sucking the joy out of your heart. It's messing up the community. Are you willing to try the way of Jesus? See, joyful people, they empty themselves. Joyful people empty themselves of the need to be right. Joyful people empty themselves of the need to be noticed or to be appreciated. Joyful people empty themselves of the need to speak first and have the last word. Joyful people empty themselves of having to get their way or to be vindicated. Joyful people empty themselves of having to say, I'm sorry, second. And they empty themselves of the pride so that they can say, I forgive first. They find more joy in becoming less. Because here's the truth of the matter, church. Whenever you and I step down, guess what happens? Jesus steps in. When you and I step down, Jesus steps in. So I want to encourage you right now. I want to encourage you right now to bow your head, and I want to talk over you right now with your head bowed. I want you to focus right now on that relationship that is not as healthy as it ought to be. And I want you to pray, not what do they need to change? Rather, Lord, what do I need to do to humble myself, to be a conduit of reconciliation, to be a channel of joy? And that's what I want you to pray right now. God, what do you need to do inside of me so I can be a conduit of reconciliation here and I can be a channel of joy? I want you to pray that right now to God in this moment of silence, and then I'll pick up and pray in a moment.